Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, an all-time week for golf headlines, gossip, drama, tea. We have it all. On top of the fact it's also a major championship week with the U.S. Open here in the Boston area. It was a stacked Canadian Open leaderboard, the LIV Tour debuted, and more players are jumping in. A historical win on the DP World Tour as well, too. A lot going on, plus part three of our book club chat on the new scandalous Phil Mickelson book. We're tuned into the LIV Music Festival as well, and a wedding weekend for Mike. And this week, we have not one, but two players in the field in this week's U.S. Open on the show, Sean Jacklin and Taylor Montgomery. Plus, the Celtics-Warriors finals for the ages rolls on. And we have a cheesecake update and a new snack on the board when we always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf. And Mike, Desert Fox Golf are the makers of the phone caddy. But I don't know if you saw my most recent post on Instagram. We have a new extension alert. We got a little,
yeah,
little new
product. Something new is coming here, yeah.
We do, yeah. So for all of those cigar aficionados that love having a cigar on the course, I'm guilty of it once in a while. But it, again, another one of those things, Mike, where it just doesn't really have a good home on the golf court. And the team at Desert Fox figured, we've already created the home for your phone. Let's also create the home for your cigar with the wonderful cigar holder extension. That's coming soon to Desert Fox Golf. So check out desertfoxgolf.com. Take a look at the phone caddy and get one for yourself. Promo code Course of Life to save 10% off. Again, promo code Course of Life, 10% off at desertfoxgolf.com.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Tosi Snacks, and D3 Golf. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was one of the most entertaining golf weekends of the year, right on schedule at the RBC Canadian Open. A fantastic field, some of the best golfers in the game, and the fans were out in force. It was a packed house up there just north of the border. Rory, JT, and Tony Finau in the final group. The worst score in that final group was what, a 64? I mean, yeah. This was a phenomenal Sunday. You couldn't write it up any better. And Rory gets his 21st PGA Tour victory, one more than somebody else. And he was basking in the glory of this win.
Yeah, very impressive W for Rory. You said it, everyone in that group, that final threesome went off on Sunday, which is exactly what you want. And with the midst of everything going on in the world of golf, decent timing for the PGA Tour's brightest stars and biggest cheerleaders as well, mm-hmm. with the recent drama, to come out and play their best golf. So the Rory-JT duel was definitely one for the ages, and hopefully we see it again maybe this weekend. Who knows? That's what they said when they embraced on the green. They said, hey, let's run it back again, and I'll see you next week, same time, same place. So it was good to see those two guys playing well, and we've said it time and time again. When Rory's on and he's winning, there's few guys that make it look more graceful and cool and easy than him. Classic Rory win, holding on. And yes, the three-year defense of his title in 2019 remains for another year.
Defending champion Rory McIlroy, two-time defending champion, albeit 3 years apart. I mean, let's just kind of use this as our nice bridge here. So this was
21. What was that? One more than who was that again?
20 more than Greg Norman, who was striding around at what I think was a pretty empty golf course and awfully quiet, from what I'm hearing, besides from the first applause that went out when Phil hit the opening tee shot. This seemed to be a pretty quiet week across the board in London, besides the press conferences earlier in the week, which was also quiet because there was no answers being given out by the players. So Charles Schwartzel wins $4.75 million for three rounds of golf that no one really watched. So
It was an interesting week, to say the least, over on the other side of the pond. Kind of a very fascinating spectacle. I tuned in Thursday morning to see kind of what this would all look like. And there was a gallery, a strong turnout for following the likes of Phil Mickelson, Dustin Johnson, the bigger stars. Outside of that, yeah, it was pretty spread out, few and far between from a fan perspective. But don't tell that to anyone at the LIV Tour, because as far as they were concerned, last week was a raging, rousing success. It was interesting to watch the broadcast, and I think there's parts where they maybe could have revolutionized golf broadcasting a little bit more. It felt a lot like most of the same. But one thing that was unique that definitely struck me as a fan was the shotgun format. That was very cool. That's got some kinks to be worked out, but the idea that everyone was teeing off in different spots at the exact same time did add for some drama to start things off early in the week.
Yeah, it was. You know, I think it's weird doing a shotgun start for a professional golf tournament in general. I mean,
this isn't professional, Mike. This is just some exhibition where guys are getting paid.
It really is an exhibition. If you're paid to come play, it is a exhibition. Yeah. That is like textbook exhibition play.
On the LIV Tour. That they're now pros, but they were amateurs. So this is the, you know, that's what a lot of people are confusing this with, is like, is this a new tour? Yes, it's a new tour. Are these professional golf events? I don't know. I don't really quite know at this point. It was just kind of more of a zoo exhibit for me in week one.
The one thing that I think was really interesting, to give them some sort of credit here, which I don't think I can give them a lot, was that kind of team idea and the draft. And then they were able to do trades.
Yes.
After the fact, too. Yeah. I mean, yeah, which was weird. Like, they didn't actually broadcast the draft. So whatever. But it was that was a cool concept. And to have that kind of extra maybe payday for some players at the end of the day. I was talking to my mother about the amount of money that is going around in the LIV, and that they're just throwing billions of dollars at this, and how, you know, last place for LIV Golf was getting what, like
120K for Andy Ogletree, I believe 22 over Mike for 54 holes.
Yeah. So that is, you know, there is a crap ton of money going on here, because you go to, let's say, the RBC Heritage in Hilton Head, just north of me, and last place got like 18,000. So there's a big difference here in the amount of money being thrown around. But there also seems to be a big quality difference. I'm pretty sure the last place person at this year's RBC Heritage probably played better than most of the guys out there in London.
Oh yes, definitely. Yeah. And the field depth is the issue I've been tweeting about, which you've noticed that hashtag I'm trying to develop is it's really, to me, it's all about field depth. It's like, you know, these are nice and it's fun to see you win on the scale, Dustin Johnson, or theoretically Charles Schwartzel, if you're playing against some of the world's best. But if after 10 guys, it's just a bunch of DP World Tour players and players who are ranked below 1,000 in the world golf ranking, what does it really matter in the end? Overall, what they have done in terms of the news update, Mike, is they've gotten more polarizing players. Like anyone who's got like issue with the tour or issue with fans or some sort of polarizing one or two sided opinion on anything seems to be gravitating toward the LIV Tour, whether it's a Phil or a controversial European tour player like an Ian Poulter, or now a Bryson or a Patrick Reed. It just feels like the LIV Tour is just inviting and persuading all of these rebels, that just these Lone Ranger golfers that seem to be kind of mystified by their experience on the PGA Tour. They seem to be gravitating to LIV life.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the guys that are going there. It is those dynamic pros. Let everyone has one opinion or another about,
you know.
Yeah, but you know, it was also, I also thought it was interesting that and this was pointed out in a couple different places that I saw too, that Charles Schwartzel and the winning team for this inaugural event,
the South African team,
South Africans, who, as we know, we're talking about good South African golfers, but let us not forget that South Africa had their own political issues when they were under apartheid. And they were asked point blank about what it feels like to, you know, be a part of sport washing from their own country and now be a part of sport washing coming from Saudi Arabia. And they really didn't give, you know, like most of the guys there, they gave textbook sport washing answers. So I'm trying to keep this happy-go-lucky and everything, but I will just say I'm deeply disappointed in the pros that went out there and pretty much said that, yes, I'm doing sport washing with Saudi Arabia, and I'm okay with that because they're giving me a crap ton of money.
Yeah, it's just that life-altering amount of money, that offer, that classic phrase, Mike, that offer that is too good to turn down, that is too good to refuse. It is just all too much money, and then that talks in this world and the society is... as much as we malign that, that's the fact of the matter. So that's what these guys are doing. They're having a very hard time dancing around it. We'll get back to what that's sounding like in terms of this week's tournament. But I do want to get to a couple other really cool headlines from the world of golf as well, too. We got to shout out some ladies because, first off, there was history on the DP World Tour, Mike. You know that Annika and Henrik Stenson now for a couple of years running have hosted the Scandinavian Mixed, where they yes. quite literally have 78 women and 78 men. They play all on the same course, separate tee boxes, exact same scoring, playing groups together, actual tournament, one person, everything. We had our first female winner, and not just by a few shots, Mike. Lynn Grant won the mixed event winner as the first female champion on the DP World Tour by 9 shots, 24 under par for the week. Really, really impressive stuff, and a headline that definitely should not get overshadowed this past week.
And people are still going to be dumb and say that if they were playing from the same tee boxes, it wouldn't have been that result. When you're at the top of your game, you're at the top of the game. It doesn't matter if you're hitting it a mile or not. You're going to hit the ball where it's supposed to go. So
yeah, okay. And my answer to that is sure. Okay, yeah, maybe that makes one or two strokes difference per round. Guess what? She still won by 9 shots.
Yeah, she won by 9 strokes. Yeah, exactly. So it's just dumb. That was pretty cool. Let's also talk about Brittany Lincecum over on the LPGA Tour.
Yes.
28 weeks pregnant and still played the week at 9 under par, tied for 6.
Just a cash top 10, which is what, 6 going on 7 months pregnant?
Crazy. What?
Yeah, and she's just rocking the belly. It's just she's living life, making putts left and right. And a casual top 10. I know what she's thinking. There's a lot of expenses coming up for her very soon. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's get all the top 10 finishes we can right now before we got to take a little break. And I don't hate her for it. And shout out to Brittany Lincecum, a veteran of the LPGA Tour, getting it done, even with the baby belly too.
Yeah. It was just beyond impressive. Let's turn our attention now to the U.S. Open. It is major championship week in Brookline, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston. They're at the Country Club. This course looks like it's going to be a traditional U.S. Open. If you don't hit the ball exactly where it's supposed to go, it's going to be failure. Oh, yeah. I can't wait to see how many guys complain about this being unfair because they don't recognize that it is a test because you're supposed to hit it in the correct spaces. And if you don't, you pay the price. So how many guys are going to complain about this course being too hard?
We're already doing it. It's already been going on for a few days now. Guys have been dropping balls in like the second and third cut of the rough. Oh my God, it's graduated rough. Look, the further offline you get, the deeper the rough gets. Yes, that makes a lot of sense when it's golf's toughest test. So here it comes. The carnage is going to be on hand. There's a few holes, Mike, which I know you'll appreciate and we will at home, that are just straight up goofy golf where a player could land their drive on the right side of the fairway, but there is a slope so severe, which you know in classic New England courses, you can have your ball land on the right side of the fairway and roll into the left rough. And there's a few of those scenarios in the U.S. Open that are going to drive some guys absolutely wild. Mm-hmm. I can already see guys fuming, and I can't wait.
I think it's the ninth hole, I think, which has water on the right of the landing area. If you land the ball kind of in the middle of the fairway, it will roll into the water. So
freaking come on type of shots, you know. Guys are going to be infuriated. It's going to be a grind. Par is going to be your friend, indeed. I wrote a full preview on runyourpool.com where you can see the full array of picks I've got. We're always picking on Twitter. I'm at Course of Life 1 and you're at MWRINC. But I mean, really, like I mentioned before, the theme has been watching these live guys, and it started with Phil on Monday. Just ducking, dodging, diving, dipping, and dodging questions. What was your 30-second reaction? How'd Phil do in the Monday presser?
He looked incredibly uncomfortable, gave a ton of non-answers about just kind of having respect for other people's opinions. He had a lot of respect for other people's opinions. His cutting off the reporter who was asking about the New York Post 9/11 letter that was sent to players was atrocious. I mean, that is not the time to cut it. I understand what he was doing. He wanted to get to the question. It's like, what's your question? You don't do it, though, during that kind of question. He was asked numerous times about taking Saudi money and 9/11, and simply said, "I have deep empathy and for victims of 9/11." And he gave non-answers throughout. He was asked something else that I want to talk to you on, which I thought was interesting, which I've asked too about, like, how are they going to grow? How is LIV Golf going to grow the game?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
He was asked point blank, besides playing in London, how did you grow the game? And he said, "I play the game and kids showed up and that's enough." That's pretty much what he said.
I did. And by the way, that question came from the legend Alex Maselli, who created the Morning Read. How about that for full circle?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's an experienced journalist asking the poignant question. They ask about his legacy and everything like that. He was very defensive, very brief, like you mentioned. And definitely backpedaling. He was defensive, but also kind of backpedaling. It was a strange look to start off the week. And I'm sure there'll be much more Phil drama to come from everything that unfolds at the country club.
Yeah, he was asked if he was going to get booed and what that would mean for him. And he gave another non-answer, like, "Boston fans are great. I can't wait to be out there. It's going to be a great atmosphere." In other words, he was saying, "I plan to be booed." And yes, he will. He's going to be booed hard, I'm sure.
He'll get both. He'll get the boo and the cheer at the same time. Boston fans know no bounds, so we'll just do both at the same time.
So here's the question. Phil Mickelson, is he going to make the cut?
I'll have to take a look at those odds. That's an interesting bet to make. I am going to go ahead and say that he's not. I'm going to say it's a soft miscut, maybe just a few over par. I don't know. That could be good enough to make it, though.
I mean, he said that he had one of the worst putting tournaments he's ever had last week in London. So
that's not a prerequisite when you're heading into the U.S. Open.
So,
small targets here this week. So that's Phil's current gossip, but let's get into a little more book club action, Mike.
You
read a few more chapters of Phil's rip-roaring, scandalous autobiography from Alan Shipnuck.
Alan Shipnuck, BT Dubs, who was removed from the LIV Golf Tournament right in front of Greg Norman. So
thank you for getting that out there. Okay, journalistic integrity. That's some weird stuff. I know we kind of do funny joking around about like the Saudi League and the Saudis and what are they going to do? We are entering some censorship grounds there, which is where things start to get a little bit dangerous. So shout out to Alan. He's okay, though, by the way. No one worry about Alan. He's doing just fine. I saw him out on the grounds. He's at Brookline this week covering them. But nonetheless, we've been into his book and we're on to chapters 5 to 7.
Yeah, that's right. So we got a little Charles Barkley. We got to see a little bit of connection on how that friendship started with all of them.
Shout out to Phoenix Suns. Amy being a dancer for the Suns. That's a wild little note I didn't quite know from the beginning. But nonetheless, Barkley there for the beginning of the Amy Phil romance.
Yep. We got to meet Bones for the first time. We got to see how he got to start being Phil's longtime caddy until they broke up because Bones didn't get paid.
Yes, so. I know. Wow. Okay. So interesting, because Phil loves to flash his exuberance and his money and his fortune and fame, but cheapskate at the very beginning of it all. That was an interesting footnote. And then chapter 5 also touched on a very scary skiing accident. Phil is known to just push the limits when it comes to everything. So of course he would go like careening into a tree and immediately have a severe injury where he knew he was going to miss the Masters to come. That's just Phil living life on the edge, I'm getting used to already in this book.
Yeah, that's Phil being Phil. And you know, it's interesting because Phil in the beginning of his career was the heir apparent to being the best player on tour. And then, of course, Tiger Woods comes out of nowhere. Well, not really out of nowhere. Tiger bursts onto the PGA Tour scene. And, you know, there's all this talk, and they talk about in chapter 6 and 7 about how Phil became, and we said this too. I remember saying this all the time. Phil was the best player to never win a major.
Oh, he was going
to
become that guy too, and it stuck with him.
Never going to win a major. Yeah. But I really, you know, he really was peaking as Tiger Woods exploded onto the scene and took away all of his thunder. and all of his chances. Because if you take Tiger out of the picture, Phil was winning so many more tournaments than he already was.
Was. And so there was the 97 Masters was obviously the breakout for Tiger. But then there was a bit of a lull before the craziness went off in 2000 with the miracle season and the Tiger Slam. And Phil talked about that moment, specifically the 99 U.S. Open at Pinehurst. That's the famous one that he lost to the late, great Payne Stewart, who won just months before his passing. That's probably one that slipped out of Phil's fingers right before he officially became a dad, and Payne Stewart delivered those wonderful remarks to him. So that was cool to see that whole era of his career spotlighted. But you're right. The whole thing became Phil, the guy who could never win the major, and here's this guy, Tiger, who was picking them off left and right. Phil, when are you going to follow suit? And it was just second fiddle from then on, all through the 2000s. And you and I watched that firsthand.
Yeah, it certainly is a, you know, the first part of this book is kind of a sobering reminder that Phil was and is, well, he was, his legacy should maybe be to a certain extent of how good of a player he really was, because he was a once in a generation player. It's just that then Tiger Woods came along and became a once in a game of golf player.
Yeah. Well put indeed. Those are some interesting comparisons. We're going to get obviously much more into the Phil Tiger 2000s in the chapters to come. One funny thing I had to note, Mike, they did run through that funny little moment where Phil had the brief AAA baseball.
His Michael Jordan moment. He had a Michael Jordan moment.
Yes, he did. He tried his hand at baseball, and he kept claiming over and over again. He was going on and on about his pitches and his repertoire and how he could mix it up and throw a changeup, and he had heat. He claimed to throw an 84-mile-an-hour fastball, Mike, but in typical Phil Mickelson fashion, which we're becoming used to, he can't quite live up to the amazing expectations he sets for himself. That 84 miles an hour, it was more like 68.
Yeah, as they said in the book, which makes perfect sense, is that the golfer in us is like, just practice, hit 1,000 balls and it'll be okay. You can't do that in baseball. You can't throw 1,000 fastballs and keep your speed up. That's not how it works. That's what he did. He just kept throwing fastballs. So
yeah, and so spoiler, in case you're wondering, Phil Mickelson's minor league baseball career did fail. That did not work out, if you're wondering.
It did indeed. We'll have chapters 8, 9, and 10 next week as we continue with Alan Shipnuck's book, Phil. I continue to really enjoy this book. I have to stop myself from reading further and getting ahead of myself.
It's always a good time. Always a good time. Yep. Love it.
Let's go ahead and switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. I spent this weekend celebrating love.
Yeah, I saw a quick clip of you getting to a wedding. It looked pretty cool. What was going on there?
This was a really unique wedding. So the bride at this wedding, her and her family are from Sierra Leone.
Oh, wow.
So this was a really unique and different look at how cultures celebrate unions of families and everything, and the dancing and way family is celebrated is just so strikingly different from what we do, what you and I have grown up with.
They're probably having so much done. More fun than us and so much more animated.
I mean, it looked like it. You know, you do a family introduction and they would walk in and kind of do these really small steps and just kind of dance their whole way down the aisle of this venue for the introduction during the reception of the wedding, and just be surrounded by people that would be dancing with them.
Sounds like a wrestling intro as they're walking out.
Yeah. The wedding. And there was, you saw this too, I think in that video, there's a point where people throw money up in the air.
Oh, hello.
So there's this thing of like a money dance where you would put money in the groom's belt or the bride's purse as a way to say, I want to dance with you during the reception. When the dance floor is open, I want to have a dance with you. So it's kind of changed a little bit for this wedding, but the same idea. It's kind of throwing money at them or up in the air. It's like, I want to have a dance with you later. That was like really, really kind of cool. It was a really unique and special thing to see. And any celebration of love and marriage, as you and I know who have had our own, is just a really special thing to be a part of. And it was a real honor to be there.
Peak wedding season right now as well, too.
It is. It is.
Nice. Good stuff. Yeah. How about this segue? Speaking of money dance, the LIV Golf Tour threw a lot of money at musical artists to perform at their yes. tournament, and they danced for it. How about that? gladly for the yep. checks they were getting to perform. So I was keeping a little bit of an eye on the extracurriculars at the LIV Golf Tour. So they had been touting this big festival style experience, and there were a lot of jazzy, creepy 1 minute edited videos. I don't know what you saw on Twitter, but there was a lot of content out there. I can tell you that the performances were solid. Craig David's still throwing it down 20 years later, and Jesse J's voice is amazing. The crowds, they did a little fake news on the crowds, Mike, with how many people were there at the festival. They gave you that classic low angle where you just see the crowd right in front of the stage. And yep. let your imagination wander and think there's thousands of other fans behind the camera, right? They were going for that angle there.
Yeah, I mean, look, when you have a camera in your hand, you can tell whatever story you want.
Yeah, there were a lot of activities, mascots, people in costume running around. It was very fantasy futuristic as well, too. A lot of new age festival vibes they were going for in London. I'm curious to see if that type of entertainment and fanfare makes it over to the US events. I'm kind of surely thinking it's going to.
Well, so how much
watching for the entertainment in future tournaments?
How much grunge are we going to get when they're in Portland next?
Right? I mean, you'd think if they had a little bit of a keen eye or ear for the local culture, they would try and lean into that a little bit. I like that idea.
Don't we'll see what happens. All right, let's get into the first of this week's guests. We have two this week. We're going to start with the son of a legend.
Yeah.
And that's Sean Jacklin.
We are. Yeah. First of two guests that are both in the field this week at this week's US Open. Yes, the US Open, the major we're talking about. They're both playing in it. And the first, like you mentioned, has an awesome lineage, real cool background in the game, and it's neat to hear about his maiden voyage to the US Open.
Yeah, we'll have this conversation with Sean in just a moment, but first, let's talk about the official on-course betting app of Course of Life, and that's D3, dollar, dollar, dollar. We've talked about this app before on this podcast, we're happy to be partnering with them as well, because this is really, I think, Alex, a revolutionary way for you and me, separated by hundreds of miles, thousands of miles even, I believe, to be able to play golf against each other on different courses at different times and play for money.
You got sentimental before I did. I was waiting to see who would get sentimental here first. But you're right. It is actually kind of a real cool connecting point for our friendship, because we live far apart. We love playing golf. We don't get to play together, but this is the opportunity to do that. And we can put wagers and we can do different formats all through the D3 app. And it's been a lot of fun for you and I to play matches, but I am now issuing the call out to everyone who's listening right now who wants to play a match against me. I'm dead serious. For money, for coins, for glory, and money that can be taken out very easily through the D3 Golf app. So be sure to sign up, check out the D3 Golf app. And find me. I'm at Course of Life Alex. Find you. Are you? I'm guessing you're at MWRINC or something along those lines.
Right? I believe so. Yeah, my memory serves.
There, add us as a friend. Challenge us, and we'll give it our best, and we'll do a match right now, and just see who will have bragging rights. So check out D3 Golf and the D3 Golf app. We enjoy the betting experience on there, and now you can too, and you can do it with your friends and us, courtesy of the Course of Life. Next up on the tee from Bradenton, Florida, we have a pro golfer playing in this week's 122nd U.S. Open at Brookline Country Club. It's Sean Jacklin joining the Course of Life. Sean, congrats. How is everything where you are?
Oh, it's great. We're just getting everything in order for next week, taking the family up with me. So, we're just getting everything prepared and we're excited.
When you first qualified and actually got through, who was the first person to congratulate you or the first phone call you made?
The first phone call I made was to my wife. And she was in tears. She couldn't believe it. And I was just so exhausted. I actually was cramping like the entire second round, which was my own fault. But, yeah, I was just happy to survive, and I couldn't even really process what had happened.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Okay, cramping in the second round. This is golf's longest day. For anyone who doesn't know, this sectional qualifying process to actually get through is 36 holes in a day. You shot 66 and 71. So I guess what was the second round grind like with the cramps, just trying to get it in the clubhouse, presumably, right?
Yeah, it was, you know, I mean, it was 100 degrees. You know, I got the last tee time, of the, you know, first and second rounds. So, you know, I finished up at, you know, just after two, and they had moved our tee time 20 minutes later, which gave us a minute to just basically try and get some food down us and go back to the tee. So, you know, unfortunately, on days like that, I don't eat probably as well as I should. And I think that, you know, in 100 degree heat, I was just getting to my eighth and ninth mile, and, you know, my calves just started cramping up. I was trying to drink as much as I could, but it's also like, you know, can I still swing the golf club and chug a bottle of water, you know, every single hole. But, you know, it was one of those things I had to manage, but at the same time, it might've helped keep me, you know, in the present. We had a storm come in, and we got called in off the course when I was on my 16th hole in the mm-hmm. second round. So, you know, it got windy on that back nine, and, you know, I was leaking oil for sure. I needed to get in, and I needed to finish. To be honest, at the time I would have been fine, coming back the next morning when we got called in. But it didn't happen that way, and I made it through, and I'm, you know, couldn't be more thrilled and happy the way it turned out.
Very exciting. So again, Sean Jacklin, you're heading to the US Open next week. Tell me about the plans and the family and who all is going to make the trip with you.
Yeah. So, my wife and my little 6-month-old daughter, Margo. Paige is my wife, and Margo.
Oh boy, is this Margo's first traveling?
My little daughter. It is her first traveling. So, we're very excited. We were wanting to do some sort of a summer trip. Here we are. We're going to go up Sunday, and then, my parents are going to fly in on Wednesday, and I have, my sister and brother-in-law coming in. I've got, at least like 8 friends that are flying in and, you know, all coming to support me. So it's going to be a family affair, affair. We're just really excited to, you know, to get up there. My mental coach, who I've worked with, John Wartman, for probably the last 6-7 years, he lives, up in the area. So, he's going to take us out to dinner on Sunday night, and
nice.
We're going to go to work. Yeah.
Love it. Yeah. I know that it sounds like that's a good little family trip, and I got to hear about how excited dad must be. Dad being Tony Jacklin, 1970 US Open champion in his own right. So here he is, having the opportunity now to watch his son play the major he won 52 years later. What were his just kind of initial reactions when he heard you got through?
Oh, well, he's obviously thrilled, you know, for me. You know, the thing with my dad is, you know, he's always been, you know, one of my biggest fans. Obviously, I think my mom maybe might come in first, but, you know, he always has known what I'm capable of. So it's, it's one of those things. He's so happy, and obviously, you know, 30 years old and, you know, getting my first major, you know, you question sometimes, you know, are you going to do this? Are you going to get out there, on a stage that you've always wanted to be on? But he also knows I've always been capable of it. So, you know, he's never going to overplay, the situation. You know, now it's onto the tournament, you know, that's just, I think, the nature of dad wanting the best for you. You know, he's my best friend in that regard. So, he couldn't be happier. I'm thrilled that they're coming up, and like we said, it's going to be, you know, family friendly week, and you know, if I can, you know, play some good golf on top of that, then it would be great.
Yeah, definitely some good perspective from Dad there. He has been there before, so good to listen to him. And it's a great support system indeed. But for sure, you know, you know the pro ranks of golf by now. Nothing gets handed to you. You gotta golf it correctly to make money and make way in professional golf. Tell everyone and kind of illustrate what your pro career has been like. I know you've done a lot of the mini tour grind and that life that you've endured here in your 20s to kind of get to this point where you're at now.
Yeah. You know, I left UNC Chapel Hill early. I played as a freshman there, and my coach at the time, John Inman, he was getting ready for the senior tour, the Champions Tour, as they call it now. I wanted to, you know, turn pro, and I thought that, you know, maybe I could do school and turn pro at the same time, but I didn't think college golf was for me. So I turned pro, and then when I was 21, I got my PGA Tour Latin America card. And that's kind of really when I felt like, you know, I was just getting my feet wet, you know, doing some mini tour stuff those first 2 years, when I turned pro, and then, got status down there, and then got my Sunshine Tour card the next year. And I was trying to use that, you know, to get some European Tour opportunities, which I did get one in the Joburg Open, in South Africa. Yes. I made the cut, but I haven't gotten more opportunities to play in on the European Tour. And so, you know, I went and, you know, then I played also on the Latin America in 16 and 19. And, you know, amongst those years, you know, Monday qualified, you know, a handful of times, you know, Mayakoba Open, was the one PGA Tour event I've played in and got in, down in Mexico. And then the rest were Corn Ferry events. So, you know, it's been a grind. I don't think a lot of people understand, you know, how big of an expense all of it is. You know, every Monday qualifier that I play in is $500 now.
Right,
so,
yeah.
you know, it's a balancing act. You know, it's like, you know, I gotta grind on the mini tours and make some money and make some extra change. And then, you know, put myself in a position where I feel comfortable to, you know, okay, I'm going to spend this $500 now, and I got to travel there and rent a car and all that. And, you know, obviously having a baby, it changes your perspective, on things, and you realize that, you know, it's not all about you anymore. Funny enough, I literally last week, I signed up to become like a part of the PGA program, you know, and, so that it would give me an opportunity to, you know, teach, which I enjoy teaching. It's obviously not the dream, but it's just funny how, you know, certain timing of things work out. You know, I was just an alternate in the sectionals the other day, and
yeah.
I was just reading through the material and studying last week, and boom, all of a sudden, you know, I'm in the US Open. So, you know, life has its funny ways, and here we are. I'm just grateful to be here, and you know, I've been grinding for a long time. I've had, you know, some good success over the last few years in the mini tours. And, you know, it's kept me going. You know, now I'm very happy to have something to really like look at as, you know, okay, you know, we can really do this.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, the qualifying for the major in the US Open is your biggest stage, but I can tell from your experience, you have a lot of experience qualifying and what that feeling is like. So just replicate that from success you've had in the past, and you'll be on your way. Again, it's Sean Jacklin, Sean Jacklin Golf on Instagram. If you want to follow, he's heading to Brookline Country Club for this week's US Open as this is airing right now. Let's get into it. I'm from the Boston area originally. I'm curious, what's your level of background knowledge of the country club in Brookline, Mass, and where did you start off your research process?
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't have, you know, too much knowledge on the country club. I have watched, the greatest game ever played multiple times.
Nice.
You know, highlighting the Francis We Met victory, I believe in 1918 against, Ted Ray and Harry Vardon. So, you know, I was reading the other day, a little bit about, you know, the landscape and how, you know, the area didn't really allow for them to shift the land too much.
So, yes. The ledge, right. That's the Massachusetts term for that. The ledge, the rock there. Yeah.
Right. Right. So they were saying they kind of smashed the course into the landscape. And, you know, that's part of what makes it unique. I know that there's supposed to be some blind shots and, you know, some dog legs and small greens, you know, all the things I guess you would expect of a U.S. Open course and setup. So yeah, you know, it looks like there's a premium on the fairway and the greens. That's for sure.
There is. And I have a lot of experience, not on that course, but in courses in the area. And one thing I'll tell you is, you know, it's not going to be crazy uneven lies out there, but just the subtle grip up and grip down on the club for those subtle, you know, undulations, like you mentioned, but both on the fairways and around the greens, will be something to watch out for. I'm excited to see, how you attack it though. What were the wise words or what are they going to be from Dad on navigating the week? I know this is going to be a bit of a different animal, but having him on your side is definitely going to be helpful, will it not?
Absolutely. You know, I think that at the end of the day, you know, the biggest thing that he's always tried to relay to me is we are all human. You know, every one of us, there's going to be 156 guys in the field, and we all have goals. We all have aspirations, and we're all nervous trying to achieve them because it's what we want to do. You know, we it's something that you aspire to. If you're not nervous trying to achieve it, then you're in the wrong arena. So I think it's you know, it's as much having an acceptance of what's going to come. Yeah, you know, I know I'm going to be nervous. It is the biggest stage I've ever played on. And in that movie, you know, that we just talked about, you know, there's a little line or something from the Harry Vardon book. And he basically just says, you know, there's two types of player, one who can handle the nerves and one who can't. And I think that everybody can actually handle the nerves. You just have to put yourself in a position to do so. And, you know, that's about knowing yourself. It's about being your best friend. And, you know, that's really the goal, you know, for the week is no best friend gets down on their buddy, you know, when they're having, you know, a tough patch or whatever. You gotta be eternally optimistic. And, you know, that's how I try to be. So I'm not going to try and change anything. You know, my mental coach and I, we always say, go play Sean Golf. We had a quick convo right before I went and, you know, got in 20 minutes before the sectionals on Monday. And, you know, it was, you know, what makes you play good golf? And it's playing Sean Golf. And I know how to do that. So it's about just keeping all that into perspective and, you know, going about my business the way I know how.
Love it. Awesome. Let's get to the easy questions now, because you mentioned you're going to be getting in there early. You were there already Sunday when we're listening. It's Tuesday or Wednesday as we're getting ready for the U.S. Open at Brookline, the country club just outside Boston. Tourney week plans, you know, where are you planning on staying? What type of dinner is you trying to get? Because I've got some suggestions for you.
Yeah, so we're just at one of the host hotels close to Fenway.
Nice.
And on Tuesday, I guess the USGA partnered with the Red Sox, and we're going to go. I'm going to take my good friend, another professional golfer, Brian Hughes, who's going to caddy for me in the event, and my wife and the little one. We're going to go. They've got a little hospitality area for us, so we're going to go check that out on Tuesday night.
And awesome. I was going to ask if you were going to be able to check out a Red Sox game. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And we're absolutely open to dinner suggestions. So yeah, we're going to be, you know, just trying to, you know, keep everyone happy and also have enough time to rest and, you know, make sure that I'm ready to go.
Love it. Are you more of maybe a seafood guy or an Italian food guy? I'd say those are probably the two best cuisine types in Boston.
Yeah. You know, I'm an all of it guy. I love food. So, we are going out to a seafood restaurant. I don't know the name of it, but my mental coach is taking us out on Sunday night. I'm sure it'll be a good place. An Italian, seafood, I'm game.
Definitely head to the North End for sure to get that Italian restaurant. There's too many choices. They're all great. The Barking Crab could be good for seafood, but I'm curious to see where you land regardless. I know you're going to have a great time out there. Again, it's Sean Jacklin. He qualified for the U.S. Open. We're going to look for him and watch him in the coverage. Sean, thanks so much for hopping on. Best of luck this week.
Absolutely, Alex. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And we're back. Great chat there with Sean Jacklin. Really, really cool. And we know it is for him to now be playing in a tournament that his father won back in 1970.
Yeah, that's a nice way to make a major championship debut with a bang, right? So shout out to Sean. Loved hearing his backstory and all the words of wisdom from Dad, Tony. And looking forward to following Sean's journey here in his first U.S. Open. Should be a fun journey for him.
Yeah. So we're going to keep this kind of U.S. Open theme going here, and we're going to welcome back Taylor Montgomery, who is it's been a while since he's been on a podcast. What was it, 2 years ago now at this point, I think?
Yeah, it was when we had him on. 2020, when we were doing that Corn Ferry Tour mega season, which went 50-something events, Mike. He talked about the final finishing position, the heartbreak there, but there's a lot more to come from that. Taylor Montgomery qualified for the U.S. Open last year, made the cut. Let's see what he's got in store this year.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, it's been a fun time of golf lately, and I'm excited to tee it up in the U.S. Open.
Yeah, man, it's great to have you back in the Nations Championship for the second year in a row. When our audience last heard from you in 2020, we were talking in the height of COVID, pondering what that mega season was going to look like on the Corn Ferry Tour. I'm curious, since we last talked then, how's life and golf been for you?
Oh, it's been up and down. I finished 26 twice last year, and then finally locked up my card and then qualified for the U.S. Open. So it's just golf can go up and down very fast, that's for sure.
Definitely. I know it was really cool to see you get through. Last year, you got into the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines through sectionals at Rolling Hills, you mentioned before we hop on. This year, you did it at Olympic Golf Club, which a lot of people know Olympic by name. Tell me what that experience was like, specifically going through the sectionals there.
I thought it was harder than Rolling Hills just because, well, the course is obviously a little trickier, but just the walk, 36 holes up and down those hills. I didn't get the best sleep that night, and my body was already sore kind of before, and I was like, oh boy. And I somehow managed to make it through those 36 holes, but it was a tough walk.
Yeah, what's with you in golf's longest day here? 2 years in a row on this 36-hole Monday. We just had right on before you, Sean Jacklin, who qualified, and he was talking about cramping up on the second 18 and just trying to get it in the clubhouse. What was the second 18 vibe like for you, just trying to get it in?
I just think there's a huge fitness aspect to it. Yeah. I remember caddying for my dad a couple times, and he would play so good, and then all of a sudden, like, hit a wall coming down the stretch, just 36 holes walking up and down the hills. Like, it's tough on your legs. Like, you're, for me, my swing starts to feel like a little like too loose. I feel like I don't have as much control. Everything just kind of feels a lot different, and you get a little sore. It's a lot different than playing 18 holes, that's for sure.
I was going to ask, is it a tightness soreness thing, or is it like arms feeling like spaghetti and like a little too loose? Like, which end of the spectrum is it?
Yeah, no, it's exactly what you said. The arms feeling like spaghetti and like too loose. Like, I feel like I start swinging it like John Daly, towards the end of the 36 holes.
how did the finish and kind of the result of you qualifying, you know, you got in at 6 under par for the two rounds. When you got in at the moment and finished, did you know or think that was going to be enough to get you through?
I thought I would get in. I didn't think it was going to be as close as I thought. Like, I obviously wasn't checking scores or anything, but I felt like I played solid. I didn't hit it very good, just on like certain holes, but I kept it in play. And then I played pretty well on the back nine. I hit a couple loose shots, but I mean, it's tough when your body feels that way. You just feel like you don't have as much control. And I don't know, maybe I'm just a golfer that likes to ride in a golf cart.
Yes, I know. Seriously, don't we all? But regardless, you made it through successfully. When you did finally get through, I know this isn't the first time for you, but who was the first person to congratulate you, or who'd you call first?
I didn't really. I
I guess my mom called me first because my dad was caddying for me. And so that they were all excited. They're back home at my grandma's house right now. So they were really excited to hear that I qualified.
Yeah, really special moment there. And again, it's great to see you back in the U.S. Open. It's coming up next week. So I guess the big question is, you did a great job in getting four rounds at Torrey last year, playing the weekend, tied for 57th. What's it going to take for you to improve on last year's finish this week at Brookline?
I think it will be a little tougher test off the tee, in my opinion. I hit my driver really well last year, but I was really struggling with my iron play, and normally I chip and putt pretty well everywhere I go. Like, even my bad is kind of average, but my iron game last year really killed me. And so if I can get my irons down and drive it pretty well, I should be right there, at least to have a chance going into the last 36 holes.
I like that. Good stuff. Yeah. Again, it's Taylor Montgomery 22 on Instagram to follow along. Let's get into the course specifically. I mentioned to you before I hop on, I grew up in the area, so I have some familiarity to the venue. I'm curious, what, if anything, do you know about the country club? You know, maybe outside of some 99 Ryder Cup highlights, how much frame of reference do you have?
Not much at all. Isn't the movie based off of that place, or am I wrong about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, great. Well, that's how Sean Jacklin said he prepared. He said he watched the greatest game ever played a couple times. Yep. And hoping to harness some Francis Ouimet vibes this week for himself. So I guess you should do the same thing then.
Yeah, I might have to watch that movie for sure.
Yeah, they've done a lot to it in recent years. It's built really through the terrain of the Boston area. I think one thing that you mentioned as per your short game is there's a lot of small surfaces, but there's a lot of good opportunities for scrambling. So if you're missing those right spots, the pars can be made, especially the way you chip and putt. So that's going to be there for you. And then maybe my one other thought is, the uneven lies, you know, practice a few extra gripping up and gripping down the club, because you won't get always a 100% flat lie out there in that part of New England. So, but it's going to be a great test indeed. I'm curious, what part of your game is working best for you right now that you really want to excel this week in the Open?
I would say the last like 8 tournaments I've been playing with, I've been driving it really well.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that continues. Cause I mean, obviously a driver in a U.S. Open, if you can hit it far and straight, is a huge advantage going into the greens, because in the U.S. Open, you're not really going to hold the green with a 6 or 5 iron.
Right. I know. Seriously. Yeah. The rough can get pretty brutal indeed. Hopefully you befriend some of those Boston sports fans. I'm just warning you in advance. They're going to be going crazy all week for you. They're going to try and give you alcohol on the course. They're going to say a lot of weird things to you, but they have their best heart and best intention. So it should be a fun atmosphere out there for sure. Are you excited for that?
Oh yeah. I love all the fans. The last year in the U.S. Open is during like all the COVID stuff, and California is going crazy.
Yeah.
And, I think they limited to like maybe 10 or 15,000 fans or something. So I'm really excited to, I mean, the more fans, the better. More people looking for your ball.
That's right. Yeah. If you befriend them, maybe it'll hit off their hip back into the first cut. You never know. So whatever we can take to get it in faster than the other guys. So tourney week plans, you mentioned you're getting in Sunday. Anything that you're hitting up during the week, Boston landmarks or restaurant plans with the group at all?
I think we're going to a baseball game on Tuesday down there. So I'm excited for that. I think I've maybe been to one major league baseball game, but it was when I was super young. So kind of excited to see that.
Oh yeah. Fenway is such a treat because it's got the charm and prestige of an old world ballpark, and it really shines through because there's seats in right field that just face out to center field and you don't see any of the action. And there's all sorts of stuff that truly makes it a 100-year-old stadium. That's quirky and fascinating all at the same time. So you'll see it firsthand. Taylor, best of luck, man, this week with everything. We'll be watching all week at the U.S. Open, and cheers to 4 good rounds. All right.
Sounds good. Thank you guys very much.
And we're back. Great check in there on Taylor Montgomery. Excited to see him in the field. Of course, Taylor and Sean headed to watch the Boston Red Sox before the start at the country club. Nothing like going to watch the Red Sox lose a baseball game at Fenway.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, nice jab there. Shout out to the Yankees. They're still red hot. Yeah, I mean, nothing like the USGA sponsoring a little trip to Fenway there for the players. That's a nice little treat. Cool little taste of Boston as well, too. I gave out the restaurant recommendations, Mike, and I knew you appreciated me giving the players advice on how to tackle the country club. You know, they really need to be listening to me right now. I'm definitely the words of wisdom they need heading into the U.S. Open.
I mean, you are a local expert. So
I said, I got a little bit of local knowledge, not course specific, but just the way it works out there. And there's going to be some uneven lies. So watch out for that. And I'm excited for all that's to come, not only for those two, but the rest of the field at Brookline.
And if you like those conversations with Sean and Taylor, plus everything else we do here on this podcast, do subscribe on the podcast app that you're using. Leave us a rating, a comment, even if it's something you don't like and you want to see us improve, let us know. You know, bad news is good news. Any news is good news. And we will take any and all to heart for it. You can also follow us on Instagram, COL Podcast, Course of Life, Alex, MWRINC. We're on Twitter too. It's Course of Life 1 and MWRINC. We're on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google, everywhere. We're literally everywhere. Right now, we are in your ears, literally in your head.
It's amazing right how we got in there too. But it's great to be with our audience, and we thank you for joining as always. I just kind of realized it's a huge week in Boston sports, for the Boston sports. And not only can you take in the U.S. Open, the Red Sox are at home, and we've also got the Celtics firing in the midst of this dynamically long NBA Finals series. What a great week to be in Beantown.
Yeah, I mean, Boston is still battling strong. We know we're going to have at least six games here.
Yep, maybe so.
How all in are you? Are you still all in on the Celtics winning this series?
Yeah, what are we thinking? It's all about Thursday night's game six at the Garden, really. That's the hinging point on everything. Like a last gasp in life and opportunity here and time to make things happen. It's your last opportunity in front of your home crowd to impress. So, you know, regardless of where things go, six or seven games, it's been a tough series. Guarding Steph Curry has proven to be a lot more difficult than we originally anticipated, but a good viewership NBA Finals overall. Nice kicker and finale to the NBA season, indeed.
Let's hashtag always end with food.
Yep, brought to you by our friends at Toasty Snacks. Toasty.com/COL, promo code COL20 to get yours today. Return trip to the Cheesecake Factory for me, Mike. You know we always end every meal with a new slice. And this time I got the toasted marshmallow s'mores cheesecake. Your thoughts?
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, this is my little ask for you, Mike. And I don't know how much experience you have with it, but the best part, I would say, of the entire cake is the kind of quick roasted marshmallow topping that goes on top of the finished cheesecake. You got to work some sort of marshmallow topping into a future bake.
I mean, I've done a s'mores babka with homemade marshmallow.
That was the one, right? That was the one, right?
It was.
Maybe
that one was pretty good.
In your future, but that was a good add to the refrigerator this weekend. Still enjoying it right now. What was your food find of the week?
You know, I had heard a while ago that Goldfish had partnered with Old Bay, and they had made an Old Bay Goldfish. And, it's literally what you think it is. It is a goldfish, not a cheese-flavored goldfish, a plain goldfish tossed in Old Bay, and it is fantastic.
Yeah, that sounds solid.
The only thing that would actually, I think, make it better is for it to be on top of, like, a bowl of clam chowder.
Yes. I just put that in my Run Your Pool article this week, what to eat in honor of the U.S. Open. Lobster chowder. And chowder.
Chowder.
That's on the menu.
And if you put frickin' tomatoes in your chowder, then just get out, because that's not real chowder.
Thank you.
That's that New York crap. I don't want that.
And I make note of that because you've said this to me a few times. This is one of your few true, like, Homer New England anti-New York stances. There's not many of them. Yeah, but this is one of them right here.
This is definitely one of them. I would say it's clam chowder and I am all in on rotaries. I am all in on rotaries.
Yes, thank you, rotaries. It is. I get in that fight with my wife all the time. It is a rotary, and we are a rotary podcast. And we'll take the next circle to next week's Course of Life. Thank you for everyone tuning in this week. We'll see you next week.